Sin is kind of an old-fashioned word. Is it still really a problem in the world today? Hello, I'm Paul Dibdahl, and welcome to The Good Word. Our topic this week is, in fact, sin. And my conversation partners today hopefully have a lot of knowledge of sin, but hopefully not a lot of experience with it. That would be my hope. Dr. Dave Thomas and Dr. Carl Kosart.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you for that.
Colleagues of mine in the School of Theology here at Walla Walla University. Thanks for joining me today. So what about sin? It is a word that religious people are very familiar with, of course. Still widely used in society, but aren't there some people who would see it as an old-fashioned concept? There's not really, I mean, sin, what, failure, maybe mistakes, but sin? Come on. This is, 2009 now.
I think it's true that, as you said, many people would kind of question the nature of sin today. It's a religious term. We talk about crime and vices, perhaps. But I'm not so sure. I completely agree that that word sin is one that is commonly understood even in Christian circles today. I think perhaps we even may have too often a too narrow of a view on what sin is, even in the church.
So, and I think I would agree with you. It's one of the words that we often use, but press us on how to define it, and we might struggle a bit with that.
Mm-hmm.
So how might we define it? How should we describe what sin is?
I think probably the first thing that most of our audience would immediately think of is 1 John 3:4. Sin is transgression of the law. Sin is lawlessness. And I think that's definitely true, but that's one picture of how sin is described in Scripture.
Breaking the rules.
Mm-hmm. An action on my part which is naughty or bad somehow.
And if that's how you define sin, sin is not that big a problem because you can find some way to confess or make right and then the problem of sin goes away by that definition. I agree with Carl. I think it's one definition. There's a much more challenging ones. And I forget, I think it's in Romans where Paul says that whatever is not of faith is sin.
Romans 14:23.
Ah. Now, there's a much more challenging definition. Whatever is not of faith is sin. So however you conduct your life outside of a faith relationship with God is sin. Would you agree with that, Carl?
I would. I think that there's even perhaps another definition that's used that was probably resonated more in the hearts of early Christians and perhaps even those in the Old Testament scriptures, and that is the first occurrence of the word sin in the scriptures. And it's kind of ironic, we would think that would be in Genesis chapter 3 with the story of Adam and Eve at the tree, but that's not where sin first occurs. I mean, it occurs, there's action there, but sin is first described.
The word itself appears first in Genesis 4.
Yeah, so if I can read that for us. Genesis 4, verses 6 through 7. The Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry and why has your face fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is for you, but you must rule over it." Now, this is fascinating because here we have sin is personified. Perhaps it's like
a tiger,
or even if you have a cat at your house and that cat always wants in the door. I mean, it's waiting, for that one opening. So here, sin is described as like a cosmic force.
Yes, yes.
And this is exactly the same way that the Apostle Paul describes it in Romans chapter 6. He talks about sin as being this master who wants to reign over us. But Paul says that, grace needs to reign, not sin. Mm-hmm. And so here we see in the very beginning, this imagery where Paul is going to draw from comes really from the heart of the Hebrew Scriptures.
Mm-hmm. And see, this raises a big question because in the minds of a lot of people, sin is merely the absence of good. It has no dynamic of its own. It is merely, it's like darkness is the absence of light. The darkness has no... It's not a substance, so to speak. I'm challenged when I look at sin by looking at the effects of sin. Because there are some immediate ones described in Genesis, like the loss of their original clothing and the animosity between the men and women and weeds start growing and so forth. But then you talk about intermediate ones where there's even death is spoken of and animosity between the force of good and evil played out over a long period of time. And then there's ultimate consequences, which mm-hmm. include death. Oh, one of the intermediate ones is the actual transformation of the human nature.
Mm-hmm.
That when you discover that sin is inside you, and it has changed you as a person, your sense of the seriousness of sin, I think, grows enormously.
Once again, that's the Apostle Paul in Romans chapter 7. He says, you know, he looked at his personal life in his analogy he uses and says he found that, you know, sin was dwelling in me, this law of sin, this selfishness that that kind of perverts the natural love that originally flowed forth in the human heart.
And what does it mean that sin, that let sin not reign over you? What is this thing that we call sin, that it has the capacity to reign over people?
Yeah, I like that illustration, because Paul uses this imagery of a king who's trying to rule over his subjects, basically. But he says, you know, let grace reign, not sin. Mm-hmm. So that tells me that there will be the residual of sin in my life until I get a new body and I make mistakes and so forth. But it doesn't have to be the dominant principle of
our
life.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like the you could point to the when I was in Minnesota, we went up there when I was first hired to be a pastor, and I noticed all these looked like homeless people living out in these little shanty homes. But I discovered that actually they were on the lakes. The lakes were frozen, but they would be out there for January, part of February. But then a date would come, and they would have to evacuate the ice, even though the ice still looked like it was there. But spring had come, and so it was beginning to break that ice up. And so I think Paul uses the same kind of analogy, that grace begins to reign, and that sin no longer becomes the dominant force that controls our lives. Grace becomes that new force.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, sin caused war in heaven even. Mm. It's an amazing thing, this thing called sin.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that human beings ought to play with, and if you think you can beat it, you have already lost, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very true.
And by the way, to talk about it being inside of us, you think of all the many communities and people groups over history who have been so horrified by the evil of life that they have gone off into some reclusive place where they can be by themselves. And if you study their history, they all come to a very horrifying realization that sin is still there, and they brought it with them because that's the only way it could have come.
I think that was what we found at the turn of the 20th century and so forth. We thought that we had progressed and evolved much.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, World War I, World War II, the most bloodiest century in history, human history.
Yeah. Now, are there some people who have not sinned? We answered that question already, didn't we?
Only one I know of in all human history would be Jesus himself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All have sinned and fall short of the glory.
And Adam and Eve started out that way, but...
This one, I'm treading on dangerous ground here when I ask.
Again?
Yes, maybe again. So we've already established that everyone sins, but research indicates, and I think common experience maybe as well, that men tend to exhibit more, quote-unquote, poor behavior than women do. Men are more prone toward violence, dishonesty, and other acts of aggression, and so forth. I've wondered before, what's the problem? Are men by nature just worse than women, more sinful than women? And I don't mean this as a joke, although we may be able to smile. How do we deal with this situation?
Well, it's
true, more women attend church, more, I mean... What's going on? Being born a man, is that just a disadvantage for us when it comes to a life of purity?
In a group with three men around a table here, it's probably not the best time to answer this question. I would disagree with you. I would say that, once again, I think sin is is not only a conscious choice, an act, but also something greater than that, a power of force. And I think it manifests itself in different ways. Although women may not be predisposed to violence, I think there are other aspects of worry, of fear, that can be a selfishness in general. I mean, we're all selfish people, so it manifests in various ways. But once again, I think sin in its essence is still sin.
Okay. So it may be that it's simply a matter of our usual definitions of sin. Mm-hmm. Maybe we would think of more male sins that males might be more prone to.
Yeah, no, I think in some ways, I see what you're saying, in some ways males wreak more havoc on society in some ways.
In some ways.
But I would say that women do their share in more subtle ways.
And maybe perhaps another good example would be to look back to the very first sin in the Garden of Eden and say, what was the nature of their sin? Mm-hmm. Was it just the taboo of taking the fruit? Mm-hmm. Was it just the unbelief?
What was it?
And I think, once again, you say, well, it's from which perspective do you want to view it? You could say, one, it was an act of disbelief or untrust. God said, don't. And they chose to believe the serpent instead of God. But I think also it becomes an act of rebellion, disobedience, ingratitude to God. So once again, it's
willingness to trust self instead of God.
Mm-hmm. In essence, place themselves in God's place. Say, I know better than what God knows, and I'll.
And see, the hard thing about the Genesis story is that this was a trick deal here. The serpent said, "You'll be better off if you do this." When in fact that's a lie, and we still fall for the same thing. But I think the cardinal thing was that Eve was willing to put her own. She declared autonomy from God. Was willing to do that, and so fell into.
And I think this is an important issue for us today because I see that often in the church we mentioned this at the beginning that there is perhaps a too narrow definition. I see in the lives of many believers, even pastors. That sin becomes just a bad choice, and Jesus is kind of the forgiveness button. Mm-hmm. So it's just, you sin, he forgives, you sin, and it's just, back and forth. But that's not the only analogy that Paul has. Paul talks about sin as this cosmic power, and that Christ breaks the power of sin. So we don't only have to live under the umbrella of forgiveness, but we can know the victory that Christ can cause in our lives today.
Yeah, and the problem is not just the misdeed, it's the thing that caused the misdeed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And see, once you've even made amends for the misdeed, what about the corruption of the human heart? Mm-hmm. And that's where I think redemption can play.
Yeah.
I can go and apologize and pay a fine or whatever it is and resolve the wrong I have done to some extent, but I cannot fix the heart.
Mm-hmm. The biblical solution to the problem of sin. We're sinners. Everybody who's listening to us today, they are sinners as well. The solution?
Well, I think the solution is to acknowledge your sinfulness and call upon God, Christ, for your redemption and transformation. Mm-hmm. And I put those two together. Redemption should result in the transformation.
I would say it boils down the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. His life, the perfect life that we need. His death, he pays the penalty. He conquers the power of sin. He overcomes the grave. Mm-hmm. And through the resurrection, he offers that same spirit to us. To guide us in our own personal
lives. New life. Mm-hmm.
That is good news for sinners, isn't it?
It is. Yes.
That's gospel.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much, Dave and Carl, for your willingness to share with us this week. Thanks also to Josiah Hackerott, our program engineer. And finally, thank you for listening in. I hope you'll join us again next week. For the Good Word, I'm Paul Dibdahl.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.